Hello and welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And we have a lot of top developer stories for you today.
All right, let's get right into it. So our first one was Scott Guthrie announcing Windows Azure Mobile Services. So Windows Azure, the first release of Windows Azure Mobile Services.
WAMS. Right?
Allows you, I think they call you, Zumo?
Okay.
Some of the way that I've heard it, Zumo. But the point is that it's cloud services for devices. Mm-hmm. The first release is specific to Windows 8, but it allows you as a developer to easily interact with cloud services. So for example, you have some sort of structured data, maybe it's a list of customers or people, and it does have some tools for authentication as well, and just make it really easy to exchange information, as well as doing things like tile notification changes, which certainly one would want for, say, a Windows 8 app. Based on something, you have a new email, etc., you can actually send notification changes, takes the pain out of doing all that stuff for you.
So I can understand why you would want this for tiles. What is special about the data that makes it different for devices versus any other app?
Yeah, so it always depends on what your app scenario is, but let's say we wanted to have a social to-do list, which is our next story as well.
You're driving the show.
Boom!
Due to
a social to-do list, due to-do.
Okay.
The idea is I could actually take an application, I want to be able to share something to you, and we can have a sort of shared repository. Or you could even imagine, I mean, if you didn't want to do this example, but this makes a to-do application social, right? So I'm exchanging information from you, you're exchanging information from me, we're assigning each other things, I'm getting my list done, you're
assigning more stuff to you to get done.
Exactly. Yep. Or, you know, you're building a social game, you just want to have a high score service.
Okay.
Right? So, or achievements or whatever it happens to be. It always depends on the application scenario, where it's more than just I want to have shared preferences across, because that's obviously built into the Windows 8 platform. But even that scenario, if you're looking for, say, iOS or Android, maybe they don't have those features.
So is this part of the Windows Azure platform,
or
is
yes.
this like okay?
Yes.
That's great. All right, because we've had toolkits for doing mobile application development with Windows Azure in the past, but this is not an add-on. It's integral to the platform.
Yes.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So
great.
And check out the Windows Azure mobile service due to example.
Okay. Next up, we have building an end-to-end Windows Store apps. This is a two-part series, and it was written by our corporate vice president, Soma Somasegar. And so I like this because it's a really, well, number one, Soma wrote it, and ultimately I work for him, so I've got to promote what he's doing, right? no, but it actually really is a great post because he takes a very simple example, which is an RSS reader, and he shows how you would add a bunch of, you know, features like live tiles or search contracts and that kind of thing to your application. So it's really easy to follow. It's quick and simple. And
it also shows up nice APIs for getting RSS data.
It does.
Because those are just built into the Windows 8 platform.
Yeah, exactly. So really nice sample there.
Cool. So Windows Phone to Windows 8 API mapping. So Jared Benz on this.
Yeah, this one I think is going to be fairly niche if you are going to be, you have to, of course, be an existing Windows Phone developer and then moving to Windows 8 to start building applications. But I'm sure there's a lot of them out there. And this is really just a point-by-point look at what are the differences between Windows Phone 7.5 and Windows 8. And, you know, he focuses on some small things like the way you declare namespaces is different, but then some bigger things as well, conceptual, like how do you save data.
Instead of pointer.
Exactly, yeah.
Video, how one displays video or captures video on phone versus Windows 8.
Yeah, and so he says up front, he doesn't mean this to be like a sit down and read this entire post end to end, but really bookmark it, use this as a reference when you're saying, oh, I need to port this app from here to there or port this concept that I know how to do in Windows Phone over to Windows 8.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. Let's say you build your first Windows 8 app and you want to go build a phone app.
Yeah, which is a good point for sure.
Yep.
Cool, good stuff. So Brandon Bray actually talks about the Reflection API. So Brandon dives into it, and you really have to jump into the changes that have happened in the .NET API for Windows Store apps and some of the differences going on that the team is thinking about for Reflection and some of the differences that happen in terms of The expectation of .NET reflection for runtime versus other scenarios, and some being more like compiler services scenarios where you actually want different things from a reflection API, and how we could change the reflection API. So if you're into the reflection API, or you're using it, or you're looking for code generation scenarios, or some of the other scenarios, definitely check out this blog
post. This is not Roslyn, right? These are things that are shipping now that you can do today, .NET 4.5.
Correct. But people, again, always want more metadata about TLR types or what's going on in the system right now.
Got it. Great. Sounds good. So this is a blog post that Brian Harry made earlier this week. If you don't know Brian runs our Team Foundation server team, or really our ALM team as a whole. And he talks about a couple of things that are specific to TFS, but he also talks about kind of the broader Visual Studio shipping cadence as well. And he talks about how when we started TFS, it was this big on-premises product that we built and shipped every 2 to 3 years. And then once we kind of explored the idea of making that available as a hosted service on top of the Windows Azure platform, it really gave us an ability to iterate on that on a very quick basis. And so he talks about the evolution his team went through over the last several months, saying, okay, well, what is the cadence with which we want to update this software? And so if you are working on a team that you run some kind of software as a service application, I think this might offer some interesting insights, because they went back and forth between, okay, should we push to production weekly? Should we do it daily? What if there's a hotfix that we need to roll out into production?
Sure.
And so what I really like about Brian and a lot of his blog posts is that he's very open about sharing the good things, the bad things, the painful things, the lessons learned about how his team builds software so that other people can benefit and learn from that. And then on the flip side of this, if you are a Team Foundation service user, then there's a lot of goodness spelled out here in terms of the frequency with which you can expect to get updates. And we've already seen that with things like the Kanban board that is starting to show up out there, and the GitTF support, and there's a big update on Monday that enabled basic authentication, and we could spend a whole show talking about just the stuff that's coming out there.
Leads us to speaking of wonderful things for people to play with that they haven't done, ALM features, really getting your hands dirty with the demo scripts for and virtual machines available. So what are some of the hands-on labs that people can do?
Yeah, so I mean, I've talked about this before. This is a virtual machine that I build and maintain that comes pre-configured with TFS, with Visual Studio, and most importantly, sample data, sample users, projects in there that light up what it might look like.
Do you have sample bugs for each of us? Because that would be awesome. Like people see a series of bugs.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Shower, Dan.
Not touching that one, but anyway, in addition to that, I also have 20 hands-on labs now, which showcase capabilities that we introduced in 2010 and 2012. So some of those capabilities are like, how do you use the Agile planning and tracking tools? How do you use lab management? I don't know if you knew this, but you can actually set up a lab managed environment now using even physical machines or third-party virtualization stacks, and we handle all the configuration for you automatically, so you can literally point it at a VM or point at a physical machine, say go, and then 10 minutes later you've got a machine that's ready to participate in a build deploy workflow.
Yeah, so, I knew that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
You give me a funny look there.
Yeah, no, I got lots of them. Yeah, that's the ticket. Yeah.
Moving right along, this is ASP.NET MVC 4 mobile website. So this is a specific focus on ASP.NET MVC 4 for building mobile websites, and as you might know, these are websites which can adaptively render based on the type of device that's calling into it.
Yeah, very cool. So you can make an iOS website look like an iOS, a Windows phone look like a Windows phone.
Right, and that's that's by Lyle Luppel.
Cool.
Which is what is it called? An acronym when you rearrange the letters for Yell Supple.
Anagram.
Anagram. Thank you.
Anagram. Hear that shark? Okay. Philip W. talks about, and this is cool because this is a very common scenario where people want to build a website that can take file uploads, mm-hmm. right? So you want to share your picture on Twitter, you want to do whatever.
Yep.
How does one do that? So you can use the multi-part form data stream provider mm-hmm. in the ASP.NET Web API. to be able to do this. So he goes through how to do it, how to set up the controller to be able to accept this, and then how you can actually, from clients, whether they be HTML5 or even a WPF sample, to say, like, drag and drop these five files. Mm-hmm. They appear as so there's multiple streams that basically represent each file, and that way you have a representation of all those files.
It's funny. I almost remember, like, the day I found a website that for the first time let me actually upload a file straight from the web browser.
Oh, yeah?
And, like, calling this guy that I knew was a web admin and being like, how did you do that? And just being blown away. It was just amazing back then. Now, of course, it's, you know, every website does
that. So I remember figuring this out in like 2004 with a .NET component that you could drag and drop onto a web page to have, like, so there's a lot of enterprise scenarios where you want to have somebody just upload 30 Excel spreadsheets and maybe do something to them or whatever.
Yep.
And people are like, oh my God, I need that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I still get like weird hits on my blog.
That's cool. So that brings us to picks of the week.
Picks of the week!
What is this funny looking pick of the week?
So PNG Gauntlet. So the idea behind it, it's fast, easy tool that combines three different tools to make your PNGs as awesome as possible. So it can take any sort of source images, JPEG, whatever, convert it to PNG, and then optimize that PNG. Right, so you get basically as fast and as lean and mean a PNG as possible without losing quality, which is an important thing to
keep
away.
I wonder how it does that.
So I think it's actually using different tools that people have built that have different things, and the end up quality is better. But yeah,
all right,
cool stuff.
Yeah, that is cool. And my pick of the week is The History of the Floppy Disk. So this is an article by Stephen Von Nichols, and he basically just kind of goes over memory lane, and he talks about the history of the floppy disk, which a lot of people don't remember the 8-inch floppy disk. A lot of people also don't remember
that. Look at that thing. It's a monster.
I know, right? And then a lot of people don't remember that you used to be able to save and read from audio cassettes. And it was extremely slow. Yeah, I never did that, but I remember having a computer that supported it, and I just, by the time I got around to trying it,
What is that? What size is that large floppy disk?
That's the 8-inch one.
I still want to just show up and be like...
Yeah. Well, I gave you Kinko's. A floppy disk the other day when you needed a file. I was like, here, it's on this one or something like that. But I recently went through my fiancé's list of floppy disks.
My fiancé! Oh, my fiancé!
Anyway.
Where's your fiancé?
Maybe the dingo ate your baby. anyway, I went through her stack and copied everything onto a single USB key, and it was like took up like 0.5% of the entire USB storage. But anyway, this is fun. Also, I found a great link from this post over to an interview with Bill Gates, where he talks about back in the day, like, holding in his hands the future of Microsoft based on the 4K BASIC compiler that he wrote and then punched out to cardstock, and then talking about him shipping it to some producer where they were going to make lots of copies that he would then turn around and sell. But yeah, it's just funny to think about. Like, none of us would be here if he like dropped that or something along the way.
Oops. So, it'd be weird.
So fun week, and we will see you next week.
Thanks.